Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you're welcome to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special co-hostess for the evening, I just wanted to make a couple of quick announcements. It's already June, and we're only 3 months away, a little over 3 months away from our healing weekend here in Philadelphia. It's going to be a very dynamic weekend with women who will, for the first time, meet each other in most cases. Sometimes we have women who come back a second or third time because they need the reinforcement or they want to give support, or they just feel good being around other people that can understand exactly how they feel. The get-together is in Philadelphia on the weekend of October 3rd and 4th. We have wonderful accommodations at a very reasonable group price. There is no cost for the weekend, but, you know, just your expenses of getting here and paying for the hotel and meals. But it's a weekend that you'll cherish forever. Women who have come to it feel really validated, and they go home making a whole new group of friends who can understand everything they're feeling without even saying a word. So if you would like to join me and some wonderful women, please get in touch with me at bonkay@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you details. Also, I feel terrible that last week we had a technical glitch on Blog Talk Radio, and we were unable to have our monthly show with Dr. Brian Hooper. Brian and I were really waiting to come on and talk about some really important issues, but he will be back with us again at the end of the month, and we'll be tying up some loose ends that everybody always feels when Dr. Hooper's in the house, life is going better. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my co-hostess, Suzette Vernon. Hi, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie. How you doing?
Good. Happy June to you.
Same to you.
As the months keep rolling by, right?
I know, right?
Mm-hmm. How's the weather there in North Carolina?
It was kind of swelteringly hot, but we had some rain, some good hard rain as I was on the drive home. So, and it seemed a little cooler outside because of it. So I hope it sticks around for a little while.
Absolutely. We were under the same situation. Very steamy and sweltering the last few days, but we've been having large thunderstorms and lightning storms, and hopefully they won't interrupt our connection for tonight. So,
I hope not.
I know. The weather's been crazy. I want to send our love to all of our sisters in Texas. I know we have so many of our straight wives down there, and I was so worried about how they're doing, but some of them have been kind enough to stay in touch with me and let me know they're doing okay.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Including my dear friend Deborah Sutton. I don't think you know Deborah, Suzette, but Deborah's a part of our Straight Wives Club, and she has written a wonderful new book, and she's going to be on the show next week. You know, we're going to be talking about her new book, Signs of a Gay Husband, and Deborah is a wonderful support person for everybody who's part of the network. She's there to reach out to anyone who has a problem or anyone going through this. You know, she's gone through her own recovery, and she's in the process of that, and she's been good for a while. And she's able to give support to so many who need it. So Deborah will be our guest next week. But I know that Deborah's in Texas, and my other little Debbie's in Texas, and my dear friend Grace is there. And so many of our women, Patty, Wendy, all of our Texas women, so we're sending love to all of you and hoping that you're all safe. That was really a horrible ordeal, right?
Oh, very. Oh, my God. It kind of was reminiscent of Hurricane Katrina when it hit Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
When
I saw
that water and all that flooding.
Horrible.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Our weather is just so unpredictable. You're either having a drought in California, where the whole place is dried up, or you're having drenching rains in, you know, Texas, and you have all of your hurricanes and tornadoes in the Midwest. So it's really a tough situation for many people.
Too.
Right?
Yeah, a few of the tornadoes, this tends to be tornado season for us, too. So I'm hoping that with all this heat we're having, that we're not, you know, upping the ante of the chances of having one.
Really?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this, Suzette. Today the big news, several of the women have written to me, because there was I don't know if you saw it on the news, about Bruce Jenner.
Robert showed me the picture of them. Is his name now Caitlin?
His name is now Caitlin. And he's going to be on the cover of Vanity Fair.
Yeah, I saw the picture, and I'll be honest with you, my mouth dropped to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He was gorgeous.
He was certainly better looking than people were expecting, right?
Yeah, I was in shock.
Mm-hmm.
I was in shock.
Well, like I say, it's a confusing situation for many people. And I'm not going to tell you that it's not confusing for me, because it is. But I've learned that even in the confusion, just to accept it, and that people have to be who they are.
That's true.
Because that's who they feel authentic about. I mean, I didn't know from these things when I was growing up. You know, I hadn't heard about it, that men felt they were trapped in women's bodies, or women felt they were trapped in men's bodies. When I was growing up, back
I
in the old days, before you were born, well, yeah, before you were born, Suzette, you're so much younger than me. But in those old days, I mean, we didn't know from these things. Who would know? You know, this was something people never talked about.
Yeah,
so,
I had never heard of that. I had never heard of that. But it's a
I'm
new
still
world,
confused.
You know?
Yep, and I'm still
world.
Confused because now Bruce Jenner is a woman, and he's now Caitlyn Jenner. And I think he's still into women, so I'm not quite sure how that works at all.
Yeah, my heart, my first thought was his kids. That was my first thought. I was like, what is his daughter's going to call him? They can't call him dad.
Right.
You know, it's just.
And we have a lot of, not a lot, we have a handful of new women who are part of our support network in the same situation. And my heart always goes out to them because, once again, it's such a difficult, I mean, it's hard enough when you find out your husband's gay, but to find out your husband's transgender, to me, is really difficult. Because one woman was telling me, you know, my daughter now has to say she has two moms. You know, I didn't marry a man to have another mother for my daughter. You know, it's a lot of confusion in there.
Yeah.
And I guess the lesson to be learned from this is there is a lesson that when you are in doubt, when you're in doubt about your sexuality, your best deal is to just not do anything. Don't bring somebody else into that relationship unknowingly.
Yeah.
Or even knowingly, because I think a lot of times, even if women know about something, they don't really understand it. Would you say that's true?
I think we pick up on something being off. You know, we don't have all the information to put it together. But I really believe our intuition lets us know that something is off.
But that gets back to our topic for tonight. Even if we think something is off, don't we feel like it's our job to fix it?
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question. I think it is. I think it's part of our makeup to fix things, to finesse things, to bring out the better in things. It's almost like I think part of our gift in being reproductive is, you know, you hand me your sperm, I give you back a baby. You know, we take what you give us and we give it back to you in spades.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a gifting and it's a wonderful thing. It's one of those powerful things about being women. But I think we sometimes make our husbands the project, and that's where we take it too far. I think the nurturing and that kind of thing is meant to be for our children. I don't think it's meant to be for our spouse.
I agree with you. I mean, it's one thing to have, you know, sympathy, and I know that you make vows that in sickness and health, but the point is that if you walk into a situation knowing that there are problems, you can't expect that by marrying somebody, those problems are just going to disappear. Would you say that's true?
So true, because when you marry somebody, as you will know, Bond, you marry them, whatever was broken is magnified.
That's a really great way to put it.
Four times. It's like it gets that much bigger.
Because don't forget, men are on their best behavior when they first meet you, right?
Yeah, I think they try to be. I think in my ex-husband's case, he kept dropping the ball. I just was too naive to recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't that great.
Some of it was because of you. Now, but I think some of it was a lack of experience, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was quite naive. I really was. I was sheltered. There was so much about life and about myself and about men that I did not know. Even though my dad was a part of our lives till he died. I mean, he is married to my mom for 42 years, but I didn't know anything more about men than the next person.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing he taught us about men was to keep your legs closed, and a man couldn't be your friend. He told us that. He said there's no way men and women can be friends. He said that men are all after just one thing. And so, you know, that was my introduction to men. And you know, if my dad told me, and he was a man, surely he should know, right?
I think he was right, though, Suzette. Don't you? In retrospect,
well, I think
father did know best. Yes.
No, I don't. Well, he wasn't right about my ex-husband. Let's say that, because my ex-husband was not after one thing. He was
well,
not after
true.
That thing.
Good point.
You know, and we could be friends.
Exactly. In fact, you couldn't be a husband and a wife, but you could have been friends, right?
We could have been friends, but we couldn't. We could be husband and wife. That sex thing just kept getting in the way, Bonnie. It just kept getting in the way.
I know. We were both thinking about the same thing at the same time. You were thinking about how can I make this happen, and he was thinking about how can I get away from this from happening. Yeah, I always say that when you're married to a gay man, you're both thinking about sex at the same moment. And as much as you're thinking about how much you want it, he's thinking about how much he doesn't want it and how he can avoid having it with you. So, that is a sad situation. But you and I both know there are a lot of women who have broken men, and it's not a gay issue. I mean, there's so many other ways that men can be broken, right?
True, very true. Because one of the things I had to realize early on was I was a magnet for unavailable men.
Uh-huh.
And my ex-husband was just one in the line. You know, I was a magnet for the man that was married. I was a magnet for the man that was a workaholic, you know, that wanted to work all the time and never had time for anything. I was a magnet for my gay husband. So, you know,
what do
my
you think
ex-husband,
that is?
I should say.
Was there a specific reason for that, do you think?
Well, you know, of course I did a whole lot of introspection because, you know, after a while, after you bump your head against the same wall after a while, you kind of start realizing that maybe it's not the wall. It's you bumping your head against it. That's the problem.
Uh-huh.
I think because of the way my father was, he was one of those men of his generation that felt like loving his wife and children was providing for them as far as keeping a roof over their heads, that kind of thing. But he didn't know anything about being emotionally available.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know anything about regard for a woman's feelings.
Do you think that was pretty much the way life used to be before men were really tuned into this? I mean,
of course.
I think a lot of marriages really were like that, right?
Yeah, I think so. Then now, if some of my friends happen to have dads that showed affection to his daughters, that was rare. That was special. You know, but for most of the men that grew up in my dad's era, the way they showed the love was by taking care of you, was by, you know, going to school and talking to the teachers. And, stuff like that.
So working and supporting the family, right?
Yeah. They did that.
And it seems like they left most of the other stuff to the mother. That was her job, making sure the children were taken care of. They were clean. They went to school. They did their homework. That wasn't part of the dad's job. Back when we were growing up, that was the mother's job. And if you didn't do something right, then when your father would come home, he'd be the disciplinarian.
Exactly, because my father would go with my mother to, like, PTA meetings. He would come to events, things like that. But as far as helping with homework, he didn't do that. Now, one thing my dad did do that was very different than most of the men that I knew, every day, and I tell you this, I can't even remember a day he ever missed except for on the weekends. He fixed us breakfast every morning. And and my mom fixed it on weekends. But my dad would come home from work every morning before we went to school, and he would fix us a full breakfast every morning. So there were things as far as the taking care of part. You couldn't beat him when it came to that. But when it came to the emotional availability part, regard for feelings, if we cried, you know, I remember stumping, falling down and skinning my knee. And, you know, you have these images of the dad kissing the little girl's knee and cuddling her in his arms and saying, baby, it's going to be all right. Not my dad. My dad would brush that off at my knee and say, ah, girl, you tough, you tough. Now that, instead of that crying, come on, you're a big girl, come on, come on, you're a big girl. You don't know that you need all that crying. And so I was kind of raised a little bit like a little boy.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe the messages back then, you know, because I was reading a really interesting paper by a woman who wrote a wonderful book who's been on my show, and she's going to be on again in July. And it's called Stop Caretaking the Narcissist or Personality Disorder Person. And a lot of us are caretakers, you know, who are in these situations that are in marriages that are the wrong marriages, and we just stay in them and linger in them because we're caretakers by nature. But, you know, she sent me a paper that, you know, she's doing a new book on, and it's about your inner messages when you're growing up from the time you're a baby on, what you're hearing from your parents, and how you value yourself as an adult, you know, from all of these messages. So if, you know, you're being told when you get hurt, oh, don't be a baby about it. You know, like it's not something with a lot of compassion and sympathy. You know, it's negative messages coming to children. And it was so interesting because I went to a mall the other day with my girlfriend, and we sat down at a table where there was a man and he had his two children. I guess he was a weekend father on Saturday. And the two nice little boys, and they were sitting there, and he was giving them, like, 10 negative messages in the first 2 minutes that we were sitting down. Like, don't make a mess. Don't spill this. Don't do this. You know, everything was don't do that. Make sure you're, you know, like, nothing positive. And when, you know, Dr. Felstad, I was reading her paper, you know, earlier today, and she said sometimes parents can give you 20 negative messages in 2 minutes. And I thought, wow, that's just what I saw Saturday. And all of those messages, you know, come into you instead of building you up and making you feel good. You know, you're already going into a situation feeling down about yourself. So I think that even though men don't necessarily mean not to do this, the fact that they don't make that emotional connection with their children many times, maybe because of the way they were socialized, where they think, well, that's not the way men are supposed to act. In the meantime, the negative messages you're getting, you know, about yourself, you know, really takes its part as far as formulating how you're going to feel in relationships as you grow older. Do you think that's true? You are
a life coach,
and you really do a lot with this.
Yeah, very, very true. You know, I can remember with my father, one of the things that was very ironic is my mom was the person that said, your feelings matter, your feelings matter. And I can remember times when I would have, you know, a complaint about Dad. Something he said might have hurt my feelings, or I felt misunderstood or whatever. And she would say, your feelings matter, your feelings matter, honey. And I said, well, I can't talk to Dad. She said, well, just let me talk to him. And because you need to be able to tell him how you feel. And I'd be like, no. She says, no, let me talk to him. Let me talk to him. And without fail, this happened so many times over the course of the 18 years I was home, I can't even tell you. But she would tell me, she'd talk to him, then she'd tell me he's ready. And I'd go into that room as if I was approaching, my head down, and I'm walking in there, and he's sitting there with a glare of disapproval. And I say to him, and I'm stuttering, and I'm saying, Dad, Mom said that I could talk to you. He said, what is it? And I say, well, what you said hurt my feelings. And he'd sit there, and he'd sigh, and he said, well, you're going to do what you want to do anyway. It was always his answer. Always his answer. And so I grew up, and it's like all my little feelings. It was like it was just pouring salt in a wound. And then I go back in my room and I cry about it. And then Mom, though, she felt like she had done something because he agreed to talk. And I'm like, but it still hurt. She's like, but he agreed to talk. So she felt like proud of herself that she had gotten him to be able to talk so that I could say how I felt. But the issue was I kept getting wounded every time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I kept getting set up to be wounded every time. And it's funny because those things do play out in our relationships later on. Some of us can't, you know, think back to a particular instance that happened. But surely that something has happened that causes we women to be tolerant of men who treat us badly.
And maybe it's just because it's an expected behavior. You know, I know that when we were children, when we were little babies growing up, I think, and I wrote this to Dr. Felstad, I felt there's a different standard for women, for males and females, that females are expected to be subservient and to give in and to do what they're told, much more so than males. You know, when it's a male doing what he wants and he's independent and strong. But when it's a woman doing it, you know, or a female doing it, you know, she's already bitchy and a troublemaker. So you're receiving those messages from the time that you're young. If you don't, you know, give in and do what, you know, men want you to do, then there's a problem with you. So when you combine these messages with messages you're receiving from parents at home, you know, it's really easy to see how people can fall into these traps of picking wrong people, hoping that if they have somebody who's broken, that we're fixer-uppers and we fix them, that we can validate ourselves as women and wives. And I see this happening all the time. You fall in love with someone who's definitely not, you know, marriage material or relationship material or, you know, even dating material. But, you know, you feel that, you love him so much, and I know that if I'm good to him, he's going to change. He's going to see the light. He's going to learn to love me just as much as I learn, you know, as I love him. Okay, so here's a reality check, Suzette. Is that going to happen?
Is that going to happen with
yeah, with the guy. Is he going to all of a sudden become your fantasy man because you've shown him all this unconditional love that he's going to change?
Oh, no. No. You can't change a man. My mom used to tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I understood it, but I really get it now. You can't change him. You know, well, I'll put it this way. I think Steve Harvey put it a very good way. He said, a man won't change for a woman unless he feels like she is the woman. That's what he said. Now, when it comes to us talking about gay husbands, well, that doesn't apply.
No,
because we would never be the woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no. we are never the woman. We're not even the other woman.
We're not even close.
You know, we're not even close. Not even close.
So this doesn't apply to gay husbands. But I'm thinking more like for women in the past who had relationships before their gay husbands that were not successful, or now in the future they want to have a relationship with a man. I always say that you have to fix yourself before you can have a relationship with a man, because men are looking for vulnerable women. You know, there's a lot of predators out there, and they sniff you out. They sense your weakness, and it's easy to fool you.
It really is, because of a lot of us have grown up around men, but we don't really know men. We don't know what they mean when they say certain things. We don't know what they mean when they do certain things. Just for case in point, let's say a woman, I'll use myself as an example. I was starved for attention, be it that I was the middle girl or whatever. I was the one that felt like, hello, I'm here, notice me, you know, because I was the middle child. So now I take that into my relationships, right? And it's like if a man paid attention to me, it was like a moth to a flame. Because it's like, oh, my God, he's giving me what I've always wanted. Oh, he sees me. Oh, he prefers me. Oh, he's giving me attention. And because I crave the attention so much, I didn't want to lose it. So it's like you appease him. You do whatever you think is going to allow him or motivate him to continue to give you that attention.
Uh-huh.
So I think you're very, very right in the fact that we have to, it's like we have to really heal our own pain. We're looking for men to do it, but we have to heal our own pain. We have to find our own way to heal our souls and then be ready for a man. Because, you know, the men that we pick to heal us usually are not the right ones. they add
more insult
to injury. And they make it worse. They make us more needy, more desperate. Our self-esteem plummets. You know, our sense of value dives. So, you know, one of the most liberating things that my inner wisdom said to me when I realized that the boyfriend before my now husband reminded me of my father, and unconsciously my attraction to him was because he was like my dad. One of the most liberating things that my inner consciousness said to me was, only your mom could be happy with your dad. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, because, you know, usually you're attracted to someone like your parent.
Uh-huh.
And when that wisdom said to me, only your mom could be happy with your dad, I was like, oh, my God, I said out loud, well, then what am I to do? You know, all the books and all the research say that we're attracted to men like our fathers. And the inner wisdom said, then deprogram yourself then.
And I think that's so true.
I learned that I could program myself to find attractive a man who treats me well, versus trying to chase a man who doesn't and turn him into a man that treats me well.
That's a really good point to make. Let me ask your opinion. As far as going after someone who was like your father, because I can see that with my former husband, he was very much like my father, only my father was straight, but had the same kind of narcissistic, borderline type of personality. And that's what was familiar to me. And
mm-hmm.
I always felt I could never please my father, you know, because as much as he claimed to love me, he was always pointing out my faults from the time I was a little girl. So maybe in finding someone like him, do you think it was possible? Maybe I felt if this man could love me, that would make up for what I couldn't do for my father?
Yes, almost like this unconscious need to right the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know it was wrong. Something inside of you knew that that behavior was wrong. And I think we end up being attracted to someone that we feel like can right the wrong. And the sad thing about it, though, is we're still being attracted to somebody who can't right the wrong. And so we end up perpetuating our own suffering.
And they say you're attracted to people that feel similar or feel comfortable with, which is a lot of times why you see couples that start looking like each other or they are looking like each other. I've seen a number of couples that I think, wow, they could be brother and sister. And people always tell them, oh, you look like your brother and sister. And that's no coincidence because many times people are attracted to something that feels safe, that feels familiar. And they see within the face their family face, and they're happy within the family, or it's familiar to them. And I'm thinking maybe the behavior works the same way. You know, you're attracted to a man who may have similar behavior patterns as your father, who never gave you what you needed in a relation, you know, your relationship with him. And maybe this is your way now to please your daddy through another person and show, oh, yeah, I am okay.
You know, that's a great point. That's a great point. You know,
yeah,
I think there's some truth to it.
I do, too. I think that, you know, fathers really do influence, you know, how their daughters choose later in life. And that's why, you know, one of the points that you and I were discussing earlier today was the importance of having children have stronger relationships with their fathers, whether or not, or regardless or not, of whether the fathers really deserve that kind of adulation. But it's important, I think, for children to feel secure about their parents. And we're dealing with women here who often have situations where the father is absent, or the father's gone off into a new life that's, you know, shows a disinterest to his current life because he's busy now reliving the time that he missed being who he was. And so a lot of times we're stuck doing things on our own without having that, you know, second hand there to help us. And it gets frustrating for many women. I know some of our women are really exhausted, you know, watching our group, you know, how many women really are tired at the end of the day. They're raising children by themselves. They weren't looking to become single parents. You know, they have to go through all the, you know, highs and lows with their kids, the doctors, the schools, taking them everywhere. And it is exhausting. I mean, people weren't meant to be single parents, for sure.
Oh,
especially
man.
When you have a lot of children, right? Some women have three and four children.
Yeah, I can remember those days because when I married my ex, I really, honestly, I didn't like children. So I wasn't trying to have any, to be honest with you. And when I found out I was pregnant with my son, my ex and I sat on the edge of the bed and just kind of stared out into the distance looking blank because we were going to be, at least in my opinion, we were going to be the power couple. We weren't going to have any kids. And so imagine how I felt when our marriage fell apart, and here I am raising a son of all things, coming from a family where there was only girls, and here I am having to raise a son and having to raise a son of a gay father. I felt like it was like, this has got to be a joke, right? This has really got to be really some kind of a joke. And it is very hard. It's very hard, especially with mothers and sons, because even things like potty training and even things like you go to the circus or you go to the game, you can't go in the men's stall with your son. And they get to a certain age. I remember sending my son in because he was very independent, and he didn't want to go in there with the in ladies because he had gone to daycare and all the little boys would go in their own little place. So he wanted to go in there with the men. I literally sweated out of my clothes over anxiety, hoping and praying that no man was in there doing anything to my son. But I couldn't go in, you know, so I understand going to the barber shops and having to sit there while he gets his hair cut and wishing that his dad was there to do those things, or the other kids' fathers coming to the game or coming to the school event, and that look of forlorn in his eyes because his dad isn't there. I mean, it is a very tough thing. That's when my ex and I broke up the second time. I lost everything. Everything. It's like everything in my life got busted up. And the only thing that washed up on the shore was me and my son. That was it.
Right.
I lost.
And I think so many of us
job,
can relate to that. Is that
car, everything. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a house. I didn't have any of these things.
Me either.
And
I lost it all.
And so you, it is tough. And like I was saying earlier today, I do understand the anger. I understand the frustration. I understand the difficulty. I understand it. But then there's another side that has to come up that says, well, I can sit here and blame him, or I can get up and do something. Because blaming him is not paying the bills. Blaming him is not helping me do nothing. Right now it's on me. And I'd be doggone if I'm going to perish. I'm going to do something, you know. And so there comes a point where you know whether you might not even want to be on welfare, but you might have to be for a minute. You might not want food stamps, but you might have to be. And is it humiliating? Yes, it is. It's humiliating going to social services and them looking at you as if you were promiscuous, and that's why you
system.
Have
them. Right.
Yeah, you were promiscuous and you had these children, and they don't realize that you were once married and you once had a two-car garage and were living in a nice neighborhood. They look at you as if, you know, you're just a number, and they treat you the same way they treat everybody else. That was a very humiliating thing for me. But you know, we somehow, it's hard, and we don't like it. But one of the things that it did show me was that I was bigger than what my ex did to me. It might not have been pretty. I might have had dirt on my face, but I was still surviving. You know, and really, it's incumbent upon every woman that finds themselves in that situation. We find a way to survive, whether it's moving back in with our parents, which we hate. You know, whether it's downsizing, I downsized from a 5-bedroom transitional ranch house to a 2-bedroom apartment that was 700 square feet. You know, you go through this. I went from having 3 or 4 cars at my disposal to drive to having to borrow my sister's car. So, you know, you go through these things, but the major thing is surviving. And for a lot of women, I'm sure, especially if their ex-husband was the breadwinner, I'm sure they're going through some difficulties. I'm sure they are. And I'm sure there are nights that they just wonder if they can put one foot in front of the other. God knows I've been there. God knows I have been there. But somehow we survive. Somehow we
do,
survive.
And
those,
we have to survive because we
have
children to be responsible for.
We
but
have
I think
to.
The important thing that you and I do agree on, maybe in different ways, though, that, you know, I feel that you have every right to get angry, and that anger is going to be residually coming back every time something gets screwed up. Every time your kids are sitting there waiting for their dad to show up and he doesn't. Every time they're waiting for him to call and the call never comes through. Every time he's supposed to take them to a game and he doesn't show up. And we have a lot of women in this situation. And, you know, they do get angry. But the important thing is that for the sake of the children, as we were talking about before, inner messages when from the time you're little and up depend on how you become as a human being later on and as far as, you know, the direction you go in. And I think it's really important to instill a sense of love in those children for their father, no matter how hard it is, only because they are made up half of their father. So when you're sitting and talking bad about him, no matter how much you want to think that it doesn't affect them, it does.
It does.
Because they know they came from that father, and they think if that father was bad, then part of them is bad.
Exactly.
And that's the point I like to make to women, that, yes, maybe he is horrible. But, you know, with my ex-husband, I always made him a hero in the eyes of my children, no matter how much I had to bite my tongue. And believe me, I bit it plenty. But because of the fact I wanted, it was like swinging out of my mouth, that's how much I was biting it. But I always wanted them to feel secure in themselves. And, you know, they had enough to contend with, you know, by having him for a father and having to go through the whole gay issue as children. You know, it was really difficult for them. And, you know, the point was I didn't want them to ever have to feel that they had to worry that there was something wrong in them because there was something wrong in their father. And I'm not talking about the gay part because that's not a, you know, choice that people make. But there are other issues with him, you know, as we all have husbands with issues. So I didn't want them to feel like they were part of that, right?
It's very difficult because, you know, I wish I could say that I bit my tongue. There were times that I didn't. I tried to, because I grappled with telling him the truth. one of the things that I grappled with was I was like, well, my ex is already lying to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to add mama's lying to him too.
Correct.
So it was very, very difficult. I had to choose my words, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I had to you know, if he would say, but Dad said he was going to call and he didn't, or Dad said he was going to come and he didn't. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't say, well, baby, you know, maybe your dad has something else to do. I didn't do that. Because when you say maybe he has something else to do, you're saying to your child something else is more important than he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grappled with how to say things in a way that would not make him feel like because he was part of his father was part of him, that he was bad, but yet being able to tell him the truth, too. It was hard. It was very, very hard. But I would tell him, I said, you know what, you're upset. And you have every right to be upset. I said, because an expectation was set and it wasn't kept. I said, so yeah, you have every right to be upset. I said, the thing about it, though, is loving somebody, the real test of love is being able to love somebody when they don't do what you think they ought to do. If they do everything that you think they ought to do, it's easy to love them.
Mm-hmm.
But the real test of love is when a person does not do what you think they should do. Do you still love them? And so that was the way I would try to help my son see the bigger picture, that his dad was still worthy of love, even
mm-hmm.
when he didn't behave right.
Oh,
and
that
was
really
hard. But
mm-hmm.
that was the message that I strove very hard, because you want to be honest with your kids. If their dad did not do something, like if the dad made a promise and reneged on it time and time again, I think it's a disservice to tell that child every time, well, you know your dad has to work. Well, you know your dad has this. It's like, come on, really? You know? But then at the very same time, you don't want that child to grow up judging their parent as not worthy of love because of it. Because we
mm-hmm.
all make mistakes and we all do things, and they're going to come in contact with people who are going to disappoint them, family members. You know, they're going to come in contact with people that are not going to always behave in the best way or behave the way we think they should. Does that mean that they are any less lovable?
Well, I think
no.
The main point you just brought up, to stop you for 1 second, because I think you brought up such a good point right now, when you just said that you don't want them to feel that, can you say that again, that their fathers aren't worthy of love? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, that their fathers are unlovable.
Right, because
of the way they behave.
If that's the way they behave and they think that they're unlovable, remember that they're made up of that father and they're going to think part of them is unlovable too. And that's
mm-hmm.
the point I wanted to make, that children view this as their failure. When they see there's something wrong with their father, they look internally and they say, well, that part of me, there must be something wrong with also because I come from him. And that's why it's so hard sometimes to just make them into heroes. But I always used to try to do that so they would feel better about themselves.
One thing that I told my son that I really believe was positive, because he started realizing, you know, kids are very smart. And
mm-hmm.
after a while, they start putting two and two together. They really
mm-hmm.
do. They might not put it together right. They
mm-hmm.
might say 2 + 2 is 6, okay? But they do put two
mm-hmm.
and two together.
Right.
And one of the things I told my son, I said, you know what, baby? I said, you are the best of who your father could have been if he had had a mother like me. And I used to always tell him, I said, you know what? You have so much of your father is in you. I said, but you have a choice of how you're going to use it. I said, you have his ability to to dream and to think. You have his ability to persuade and influence. You have those abilities within yourself. I said, and sometimes your father has used those abilities in a way that's not so great. I said, but you have a choice to use those abilities for good. I always tell him, use your powers for good. Because he was all into superheroes. And I would tell him, well, use your powers for good.
And, you know, that's how we have to, you know, we have to raise our children, being both a mother and a father in many cases. You know, the missing parent, you know, we have to fill in for him. And it's really important, once again, to make your child feel valued on that end of the spectrum, where many times it's not only the father, but often the other part of the family is all of a sudden gone. You know, a grandmother who used to be in touch, you know, an uncle that's no longer talking to you. You know, a lot of times these family complications just multiply. You know, you always think, well, once we, you know, things don't work out for us, we now have an inner family that will support us. It doesn't always happen that way. Did it happen for you that way?
Yeah, it did, especially on his dad's side. Things got very tense and complicated.
Oh, okay. So they didn't work out good, right?
Yeah. He would still, you know, his father would still take him to see his side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really talked to our son about, you know, his family. But, of course, there were some people that he gravitated toward more so than others. But then as he got older, he started overhearing whispers or noticing eye rolls or body language whenever my name would come up. And he put two and two together, and he didn't like it. He didn't like it. And when he got older, he didn't feel a part of them because they didn't know the whole story, and they didn't think that he was smart enough to know that they were talking about me, but he was smart enough to know it. I will say that during a time when he and his dad really had a major falling out, I mean major, had there not been other male role models in my son's life, I don't think he would have made it. And so one of the things I would offer to the radio audience that's listening is, do not underestimate the influence of positive real male role models in your child's life. Because for many of our sons, they're coaches, they're teachers, maybe your brother or you know, their uncle or their grandfather on your side or, you know, or something like that. You never underestimate that, because during the time when they might not have their own biological father, or let's say they reunite with their biological father, but they are very disappointed or hurt, because, you know, kids carry these fantasies about their fathers. And when they realize they meet the real person, they're very disappointed, that these male role models can be a saving grace. I think had my son not had close bonds with other male father figures in his life, when things crashed and burned with he and his dad, he would not have survived it.
I think that's a really great point you're making also, that it's really important to try to find others who can fill in. You know, they may not be a father, but at least if they're an uncle or they're a male figure or a family friend, somebody to try to fill in that role. Because
well,
it's really hard all the time as women for us to always do this, right?
Well, you know, I think we have to make it just as much of a priority as putting food on the table. Because our daughters need it, but our daughters identify more with us.
Right.
Whereas sons, when they are hurt, theirs manifest in anger. Daughters, when they're hurt, it seems to manifest in promiscuity. And so both need positive male role models, but especially sons, because sons identify with that gender.
And I think you can always ask, you know, somebody in your church or on your synagogue or your mosque or whatever, you know, religion you belong to, go to, you know, the minister, priest, rabbi, you know, what, imam, and ask, is there somebody here who could, you know, spend some time with my son? You know, his dad's not around. I need to have some good male modeling, role modeling for him. Or there's Big Brothers Association.
Oh, yes.
Where,
that's,
you know,
a
they're
very,
really good,
very,
right?
Yeah,
you know,
Big
they're really
Brothers,
well trained.
You know, even if they want to be part of the Cub Scouts,
mm-hmm.
things like that, you know. One of the things that I did with my son when he was young, he, I let him take drum lessons, and the person that taught him drum lessons was a man. You know,
mm-hmm.
I when he wanted to play in the little Pee Wee League at the YMCA, I sat down and I talked to the coach before. You know, I interviewed the coach. Anybody that got involved with my son, I interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
I sure did. I talked to him. I told him why, you know, that I wanted my son to have positive role models. I made sure that the men in his life were not just African-American.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure that there were men in his life that were of different ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
And different colors. You know, I did. I wanted to expose him. I wanted him to see how positive role models, fathers taking time with their children. One of my male friends took him fishing, taught him how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different things that I did, and I made it a conscious decision to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I made it just as important. Was I exhausted? Heck yeah, I was exhausted. But I had to do those things and do the work, because one of the last things I wanted was for him to end up becoming sodomized or harmed by somebody. And if I didn't feel good about the energy I was getting from him, then I looked for somebody else.
Mhm.
I mean, really.
Yeah, those
really
are things
did.
Now that you have to worry about, right? They're realities for people.
Yeah, because when you started mentioning, you know, different people in these different organizations, you know, I'm sure in every religion there are predators. In every one of them, there are predators.
Everyone.
Just like
exactly.
You have to be careful in schools, because some of the teachers are predators. So, you know, it's very hard, and it is very hard on parents when you're trying to work, you're trying to deal with things, and then your children go to school and trying to get off. Some of these jobs are too hard to get off of, so you can go to things that your children are doing, you know. But there are ways to make your presence known. One of the things that I did a lot was email for my son, especially when he was older, because email was not as popular back when he was younger. That's how old I am. But as he got older, I would email the teachers and say, I wasn't able to come to so-and-so and so, but I want you to know I'm interested. How is he
uh-huh.
doing? Can we talk on the phone? I wasn't able to get off my job, but I'm very concerned about my child. I noticed this about his homework, and I have questions about it. What's being done? Does he need a tutor? I mean, I let my fingers do the walking, you know.
And I think that's wonderful that women should know that. You can still be involved even if you can't be there, that you
yeah.
have to improvise. And I think that people are more aware today about the role mothers play when they're single parents, that many of them have to support their families and they just can't take off the jobs that easily. And I think
mm-hmm.
the schools make arrangements to either talk to you by phone or, right, you know, through email. So that's certainly a boost over when, you know, I was raising my kids and we didn't have computers to start with.
Yeah.
So now.
I know, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. No comment. I won't tell you what year that was. And anyway, Suzette, we're actually coming to the end of our hour. I can't believe it always goes so fast when you're on
the phone.
I know,
right?
But
gosh.
Let people know that Suzette is a wonderful life coach who has really guided many people in the right direction, Coaching is not therapy. It's taking your life now where it is and putting it in a good direction and having a coach there cheering you on and making sure you're making all those right steps, whether it's meeting the right men or making better choices in the men that you meet, you know, how to check out men better, because a lot of us think with our hearts and not our heads. And so if you need to get in touch with Suzette, I'll let you give her the website. Go ahead, Suzette.
As long as you don't make fun of me, Bonnie.
Okay. I'll try not
to. www.suzetterhinton.com.
Okay, and if you didn't get that all in one shot, just write to me or go to my website and look under resources and you'll find Suzette there. And Suzette is the author of some wonderful, wonderful books that I have her collection. And, you know, it's just wonderful to be able to use them as a resource. In fact, my favorite book is You're Protecting Your Emotional G-Spot, where you talk a lot about these things, about when you're looking for relationships, things to avoid. You know, and I think that as women and women who have been hurt, that we all go through this. The important thing is we want to break the cycle. We don't want to keep going through it. And I think if we don't work to do that, whether it be through a coach, through therapy, through support groups, we're just bound to make the same mistakes over and over again. So Suzette does coaching by phone. She also does coaching through Skype. And also she's having a meetup group in North Carolina, right?
I am. July 11th from 1 to 3, I have a meetup. It's called the Statistics Be Darned. Dating and Relationship Meetup. It's in Garner, North Carolina. So if anybody is in the Triangle or Triad area, or if you're going to be visiting during that time, come on by. But the whole premise of the meetup is the statistics can be very, very unkind to women over 40 or college-educated women or women of a certain ethnicity and tell us that it's too late for us to find love or to get married. And I am proof positive that that's not true. But those statistics are starting to cause a lot of competitiveness between women. They're starting to cause women to settle for men that they might would not have even entertained before. Because they feel like the pickings are slim and they got to take what they can get. But I believe that abundance is not measured in quantity. It's measured in quality, and there are still some quality men out there. And so that's part of my campaign to tell women, don't believe it. I'm proof positive. I got married to the love of my life at 55 years old after having the kind of history that I had. And if it can happen for me, it can happen for you if you're willing to do the work. It can happen to you.
Is that really true, though, Suzette? Because, you know, you have one unbelievable man. I think I have the other one. Is there really anybody else left?
You know, there's a part of me that would want to say, we got it, girl. We got the market corner because we got the two greatest men in the world.
Right.
but truly, I believe if there are good quality
women
out
there,
there are some wonderful men.
You just have to know how to find them instead of the ones who are the losers. So Suzette will definitely help you with that. You don't want to pick a loser man and a predator because there's so many out there. And if you're not sure, just listen to all of these broadcasts, and you'll certainly hear from people like Donna Anderson from Love Fraud and from Dr. Enef Gelstead about caretakers. And we have so many wonderful experts coming on who have books out about this on how to save yourself. And, of course, next week, once again, I'm very excited. We'll have Deborah Sutton from our own group on telling about her new book. So, Suzette, I want to say thank you so much. You know I love you. And I'm so glad that you're on the show every month with me, spreading your good news and goodwill and smart, smart advice to help women move ahead in their lives. So to all of our listeners, we say good night, and we love you, and I love you, Suzette.
Love you too, Bonnie. Good night, listeners.
Good night, listeners. I'll let you go with a song that I love by the Beatles called Blackbird. Good night.
Good night.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly. Blackbird fly. Into the line of a dark black night. For this moment to arise.